Fans, we are back live with another edition of the Cheap Heat Productions Pro Wrestling Podcast. My name is Jack Kilby, Executive Vice President of Great North Wrestling, and we have a very special guest with us this evening, pair of guests actually, to talk about the many endeavors that they're engaged in, being WrestleMania week. We've got all kinds of activity going on in the Philly area. I would be, of course, talking about veteran superstar wrestler, WWE, AEW, ROH, Japan, TNA, etc. That would be Mr. Bobby Fish and his manager, Mr. Matt Halleck. Welcome to you both, sir, to the Great North, the Cheap Heat Productions podcast.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate you having us on. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for your time. Before we get into all the good stuff that's happening in terms of WrestleMania week, Matt, could you advise the fans as to your relationship currently in a business sense with Mr. Fish and your background, please?
Sure. So I guess I'll go backwards to where we are in the present form. So Bobby and I have known each other for about 40 years. We went to grade school, middle school, high school together in the capital region of Albany, New York, just about 3 hours north of New York City. Bobby went off and played collegiate football as a middle linebacker at Siena College. I played collegiate baseball. We graduated the same year. Uniquely enough, Bobby's middle linebacker position, American football, in college was the same position my father played at that same college. My father was an All-American and ended up head coaching at that college way back in the 60s. So there's ties to my family, Bobby, all things that we've done. And then our paths have crossed when Bobby signed with WWE, moved into the Florida area to work at the PC. Under the black and gold brand of NXT. And I was in Tampa, Florida at the time. So Bobby and I connect, we're close to each other. And then recently, as of December of last year, going into this year, we made a collective decision of helping out early career talent. It's our specialty of coaching. So a lot of the stuff that we do together is on the coaching early career talent service side. And then I'm just an operator when it comes to connectivity and managing people and relationships. So I'm spearheading a lot of the activities that our Bobby's doing across the globe.
Excellent. And speaking of which, at least in the finite term, Bobby, you're going to be in Philly for all the happenings there for WrestleMania week. Could you let the fans know what exactly that entails?
I mean, it's a little bit of everything. First, right off the bat, I'm going to be doing some DDP yoga classes where I'll be instructing a very unique situation we have with a couple of those will be at a Muay Thai gym, which Muay Thai is also something that I've done for years. Martial arts is just a huge part of my life, always will be. We've got scheduled a couple of classes that I'll be participating in. I won't be instructing. And then after those classes, I'll be leading a DDP yoga class, which I think it segues really well into martial arts, pro wrestling, any sort of like activity where mobility is something that is an essential, often overlooked and somewhat neglected aspect of athleticism and of just coordination and better quality of life living, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. In terms of your past experiences there during with the big company for WrestleMania, are you taking a different approach this time, given you're engaging in some autonomous activities this time?
Well, so WrestleMania has been the unique thing that it is, whether you're with the company or if you're just in the pro wrestling industry. And I can say this going way back to even before I worked with the company, with and that company being World Wrestling Entertainment. you know, it's created a somewhat of a Super Bowl, I don't know, Disney World sort of feel, and that whatever city is hosting it becomes just wrestling, professional wrestling central for that 5 days or week or whatever it is. And so I think even from an independent contractor standpoint, you have so much. If you're anybody in the wrestling industry, like, you do yourself a favor by being front and center at WrestleMania, whatever that host city is, you know, on top of the revenue it brings into that host city. If you're an aspiring and up and coming wrestler or whatever, you do yourself a favor by being there, you know, in some capacity. It doesn't matter what it is, but be there, get yourself there.
Absolutely. I understand you're going to be presenting an honor to one of your trainers or mentors, and that would be Tony DeVito, one half of the Baldies, yes, who I happen to do a podcast with, Kingpin Medina. So I've had the pleasure of interviewing Tony a couple of times. Can you talk about not only that situation that's pending, but what your mentorship looked like under him, training looked like under Tony?
Yeah, you know, Tony is he's still active, but you know, we're all figuring this thing out, and you know, you don't know when you're gonna pull the plug on it, or you know, do you ever officially pull the plug on it? I mean, maybe not. Like, Ric Flair is proof positive of that. Anyway, I think with Tony, he's looking for what might be next, and this is a chance to honor him. There are some people that were getting together to do that, and when asked if I would participate in it, I said yes, please. Like, where do I sign my name to do this? Tony is responsible for really, you know, the career that I've had. It all started with Tony DeVito. He's the one that trained me. He's the one that got my foundation set, which I've been complimented many times on that, just my fundamentals, and that's Tony DeVito. Now, there were other people along the way that there's been seasoning added, you know, to some extent, especially wrestling in Japan and whatnot. But Tony, none of that is possible without Tony. So the least I could do is honor the man with this opportunity. So I was happy to do it, and I'm excited for it.
Mm-hmm. One of the names that you're intertwined with, you know, in the history books and et cetera, is your partner Kyle O'Reilly, from you know, the successful Red Dragon team that you had for many years. One of the, you know, truly without hyperbole, one of the most influential teams in the post 2000 era. And I wanted to get this is a two-part question, please. Wanted to get your impression on what Kyle recently returned to AEW and is sort of, you know, at this point, at least not in a tag team per se. What do you think the opportunity would be for you to make a return and team with Kyle again, be it there or somewhere else? And also, looking at all the great matches that you had throughout your career, you know, with the Briscoes, I could go on and on. What would be your highlight match or moment in ring with Kyle as that team?
I think, you know, with Kyle and I, it kind of transcends the business, because at the end of the day, you know, we're brothers, we're best friends, you know, I know his wife, he knows mine. We're more than professional colleagues. And I think that's what made the Undisputed Era as successful as it was the fact that, you know, we were four guys that truly were tight and still are to this day. Red Dragon, obviously being the predecessor to the Undisputed Era, that was something where, you know, Kyle and I had known each other, but it was Hunter Johnson, Delirious with Ring of Honor. He it was his idea to put us together. Kyle and I were very familiar with one another, knew each other, had wrestled against each other, had very similar styles, but I guess didn't realize how similar we were from a human being standpoint. And so the chemistry was instant. And I think that that had, you know, as much to do as anything else with the success of our team, Red Dragon, and later the success with the Undisputed Era. If I had to, you know, I think I've said this before, but there's as far as the highlights with Kyle and I mean, they're numerous. You brought up matches with the Briscoes. We were in a very fortunate situation when we were establishing ourselves within Ring of Honor as the tag team, Red Dragon, that we got to work with guys like Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, the American Wolves, and teams like the Briscoes that were staples, and they were pillars of that. So the fans, you know, were going to gravitate to them and love them. So it was easy. Whoever was standing on the other side of the ring, it was easy to hate them, right? So we got to really dive headfirst into that. And I think it set us up for success in a great way. So if I had to pick matches that stand out, you know, our first tag team championship was in Ring of Honor, and we beat the Briscoes. As far as Ring of Honor goes, like, you're made at that point. So that I look back at very, very fondly. And then I'd say if I picked another one, the one that comes to mind right now, because there's numerous, but would be we got to wrestle AOP in NXT. It was a takeover in Philadelphia, ironically enough. And the little kid in me really got to be indulged in that, because Paul Ellering was on the outside of the ring with AOP, and being a big fan of the NWA, what would eventually become WCW, I saw Paul Ellering with the Road Warriors for years compete against Arn and Tully, you know, the Four Horsemen, who would later become the Brainbusters, et cetera, et cetera. And to know that, like, in its own way, that's kind of, you know, yeah, that was walking out a childhood dream for me. So, yeah, that's one that sticks out and always will.
Most folks remember with and you know, speaking as a fan myself, when you signed with AEW after the WWE tenure, you know, hopes were high that you know, you were going to, you know, really be used properly and be involved in some good matches. Then Kyle came afterwards, and then it seemed that they had no real clue how to use your talents. If you could boil it down to a single factor, maybe it's multiple. What happened there in your, from your perspective, that they didn't, as I keep saying, put the pieces together with an established commodity already, such as yourself and Kyle?
I don't really know. You know, it would very much be above my pay grade to kind of dissect that. It was I think just came down to timing on a lot of things weren't perfect. Contracts are what they are, and when you're working with a team of any type, or you've got multiple parts and entities that make up the sum And I think the sum is what people were clamoring for, you know, and that sum could be two of us. It could be four of us. It could, you know, depends on how you want to see it. And it just, you know, this industry is the way that it is. And it's a very individualized industry. But you do have groups and factions that are beloved. And I mean, let's face it, like the Four Horsemen, you know, for me as a kid growing up, like that was kind of an institute. And, you know, the fact that we are even discussed in, I don't even want to say similar terms. Like, I can't say it. I can't get the words to come out of my mouth. The fact that we are even just discussed, period, when it comes to stuff, and remembered fondly, like that's a charmed life for me. And I'm gracious for that. I'm grateful to Tony Khan and AEW, just as I am to Vince McMahon and WWE, that somebody was willing to pay me any of their money to do this job that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have for 25 years. And that's taken me, you know, back and forth to Japan, you know, 100 times. And it just, you know, it really is. It's a very charmed life that it's allowed me to live. And I'm just grateful for it. Why I do feel like there was money left on the table, you know, but that's just this industry. That's the way it goes, you know.
Sadly, yes. The wrestling world is talking about an interview just released 2 days ago with CM Punk and Ariel Helwani, where a lot of rumor, innuendo, conjecture was laid out on the table in terms of the environment there being chaotic, not being professionally constructed, and then of course all the interpersonal seeming disputes that never really got solved from a management perspective. Was that your experience there compared to, which we'll talk about next, the WWE? Was it one of disorganization and a lot of ill will amongst factions there?
Things were different between the two, obviously. And when I say the two, I'm talking having come from WWE and then going to AEW. They were different. None better or worse, just different. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's still pro wrestling, and that's what I've done for 25 years. And dare I say, what I think I'm pretty damn good at. So, you know, we're independent contractors, man. We go where we go, and we go to, for lack of a better term, the highest bidder, and we ply our trade. And if somebody is not, you know, the more places that give us a platform to ply our trade, then the better it is for the industry, the better it is for the employees, the wrestlers, you know. And the way that I see it is that things are every door that you walk into, every organization you walk into, TNA, New Japan, NWA, MLW, WWE, AEW, they're all different. They're all, now, are there similarities? Of course, it's still pro wrestling, you know, the marquee is the same, but, every place is different. Every place has things that you love and things that you're not so fond of. But I mean, welcome to the real world, you know. So if that's something that anybody's unable to get their, you know, wrap their head around, like, then I don't know. I don't know what to say for you, but like, you've not spent a whole lot of time in the real world, because that's just life.
Mm-hmm. Would you be open to, now that O'Reilly's back, returning to AEW to team with him or in general?
I don't think I could ever turn down a chance to team with Kyle, because we're just, you know, two peas in a pod. So it wouldn't matter where it was, but I don't rule anything out, from a company standpoint, from a, if it's pro wrestling, hell, even if it's not pro wrestling, I fought in Dubai, a year or so ago in a boxing match. Like, you know, for me, the legs that I got left when it comes to, just an active, sort of, professional career is anything is possible, and I don't rule anything out. Like, I think I still have a few legitimate fights left in me. I know I've still got some wrestling left in me, but I mean, more than anything, and this is where things kind of segue to me and Matthew is, I love kind of giving back, and I love kind of seeing that there's another generation of people coming up that I can help. And more than anything, that's where I see my value is in helping other people.
So where, and I'll direct this one to Matt, where does that impetus come for such a, you know, a philanthropic approach to give it? Because let's be honest here, in entertainment, sports and entertainment, there's not as much of that sort of spirit of giving back as we really should. So where did that strike you? How did you come up with that philosophy?
Yeah, well, I think it stems back to Bobby and I are athletes at the Purist, and we were leaders of our schools, and we were looked up to as peer leaders, going through the youth ranks, going through the high school, collegiate ranks. And then, like you said, you get into your career journey, and you know that a lot of performers or athletes are athletes, but they can't coach. Right. And not every athlete can coach and resonate with individuals, understand psychology, how to communicate properly. I mean, Bobby, I come from a communications public relations background, and Bobby's is an English bachelor's. Like, we're master communicators, and we know how to resonate really well with millennials and Gen Zs. We're talent development specialists. And I think that's the uniqueness to Bobby at this point in his career, that there's so much to give outside of being an athlete, competing in actual fighting in kickboxing, Muay Thai, or boxing, but in-ring performance, but talent development. I mean, he was with Rudy Boy Gonzalez down in Texas, doing a seminar there and giving back to early career talent. We're going to be doing, and we've been gracious enough for the doors to open with the Hearts in the Dungeon 2.0 here in Tampa, Natalia and TJ Wilson, and working with some early career talent there. And Tom Budgen, one of Bobby's friends on the Muay Thai side, Malachi Black, is right here in the Tampa Bay area. And he's been gracious to open to his students, to Bobby, because, like I said, not everybody can coach and resonate and understand, you know, groundwork, rope work, grappling, have Muay Thai, mixed martial arts, the Shakespearean side of understanding what a face is and what a heel is, how to walk out of the locker room, through the curtain, work the crowd. Bobby Fish has done that for 25 years, but he can actually coach it too. So, and it's the same thing that I do on my side. I work with the University of South Florida, University of Tampa, career readiness, talent development. And I do it across the country in large dynamic baseball and softball camps too. So him and I are just cut from the cloth of giving back to the next generation, ensuring that they're doing the right things the right way.
And that's so important. And you make a good point. It's one thing to be able to be a high level athlete performer, but another to be able to coach that and translate that. So that's so important. But speaking of developmental, I'd be remiss, of course, Bobby, if I didn't ask you about when you came into NXT in 2017, there seemed to be a paradigm shift where individuals from the quote unquote indies or the super indies or the darlings of the internet, the work rate guys were not wanted in the WWE system. And then you yourself, Kevin Owens, all on and on, sort of broke that mold, if you will, and open it up to so many great matches and situations. What credit do you think Triple H deserves for sort of moving that needle away from what is reputed anyway to be Mr. McMahon's distaste of that style?
Mm-hmm. It's probably above my pay grade as to who's actually responsible for it. But there was that sort of trend did seem to develop. And I think it was exciting for fans to see, like you mentioned, Kevin Owens, but same with Finn Balor, Sami Zayn. These were people that, you know, indie darlings, international, when you're talking about Finn or Fergal, as I had always known him previously. But, you know, these were people that I think fans had resigned to accepting they were never going to see them on WWE TV. So there was a time that was seemed to be kind of coming to the forefront. And I think NXT was the place for that. Previous to that, I felt like New Japan had a real strong grip on what the underground, you know, or like even a place like PWG, like guys would come in and out of these places. And it was like, man, these are the guys that can really go. And so whether it was Triple H or William Regal or whomever, I don't exactly know, but somebody saw that there was value there. And I think it opened a door initially for that. And when those commodities came in, you know, guys like Kevin Owens and Fergal and Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins, another one. I mean, these are the guys that the proof was in the pudding. So when they got a chance, when somebody gave them the ball, if they fumbled it, I don't think that door would have been open for the rest of us. But because they not only ran for one touchdown, you know, Seth ran for 10, it made the powers that be or the people that were making decisions at that time more open to, and they paved the road for something like the Undisputed Era to happen.
Speaking of which, you've mentioned that you're a fan of the Horsemen and Tully and Arn, and what a great stable that was, and the chemistry that existed legitimately between those individuals and yourself in the Undisputed Era. When that concept was presented to you, first of all, how was the faction presented, and when it was, what did you know that they had you were figured in big time by the office for, you know, the focus and the push that you received?
No, it all kind of, you know, was fed to us as we went along. I'm going to fill in a good amount of this with my own imagination because it's just the only way I've been able to make sense of it. I know that Hunter and Sean, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I know that they were fans of, NWA, late 80s, you know, that there's influence there for sure. I know for a fact. And that being said, when we were coming in, Kyle and I were thinking that we might, you know, they might keep us as a tag team. We had no idea that they would, you know, align us with Adam. Roddy was already there. So, you know, in the first year or so, Roddy wasn't a part of it either. So it was presented to us as potentially the three of us, Adam, Kyle, and I, and that was, I was honestly waiting for the other shoe to drop when Hunter presented that concept to us, because I thought like, okay, somebody's going to come out and be like, yeah, we're just, you know, we're ribbing you. This is not for real. Because if you had asked us like, hey, what would your ideal situation be? Of course we would have said something like that. So to be given that opportunity, and then, a year and a half in or whatever, whenever I had, my ACL injury, The concept of Roddy being added, it kind of brought it full circle. And so this is where my imagination comes in now, is that when the War Games came back, I just couldn't help but think, like, okay, well, this is Hunter's, because I wore those VHS tapes out as a kid watching the War Games over and over and over.
Me too.
And it was, yeah, and it was Dusty, and it was the Horsemen, and, you know, these are the things that I know Triple H and Shawn were fans of as well, and it's hard not to see the connect the dots of, like, the Horsemen as a group, and then, again, it's hard for me to put it in the same sentence, but us, me and three of my friends, and then for the War Games to come back and us to be basically the Horseman entity for those first four War Games, it was like, somebody pinch me, because this, again, it's just me being able to indulge that 13-year-old in me that wore out those VHS tapes. And if that was their plan, bravo to them. If it was only to make the 13-year-old in me as satisfied as I could be, like, that, job well done, I guess. But yeah, it was certainly a window into the industry that I'll never forget.
Matt, in terms of you come from a different sports background at a high level, what skills do you take from your background in regular sports and apply to what you're doing now in terms of that giving back and developing further generations of competitors?
Yeah, good question, Jack. I'm very similar to Bobby. I'm a hybrid. I'm an athlete still at 47, same age as Bobby, give away our age, that could compete at a high level. I still play hardball now at a high level. I think it's just being able to communicate. I think that's the biggest thing, is be able to walk the walk and talk the talk. You can showcase biomechanics, how your body freely moves in space as an athlete when you're talking to early career talent. But then you can resonate that and know the dichotomy of words, so it actually is consumable to them. If they're high level, if Bobby's doing a seminar, with individuals that are, 13, 14, 15 years in, it's vastly different in communicating to those individuals than it is somebody 6 months into the professional industry. It's the same with me. If I'm working with professional fast pitch softball or baseball athletes, it's different than a 14, 15 year old in high school. But we're able to use our words properly to make things resonate. And I think the biggest thing is it's given back. People gave us a push at some time in our career, and we all had mentors, like Bobby talked about, Tony from the start. I had my mentors that only accelerated and helped me get to the levels that I could get to collegiately and professionally. And from a human aspect, if we're not, we'd be doing a disservice to early talent if Bobby and I didn't give back. For that fact, that is the sheer fact of why we're doing what we're doing. I'm extremely excited to work with my friend. We're collaborating on some stuff too on the wrestling side, because I come from networking, how to professionally communicate electronically, verbally. How do you develop your elevator pitch? How do you pitch yourself to a promotion, from a communication aspect? And then Bobby's all things specialty, in ring and promotion side. So It's exciting for the two of us to transition into professional talent development specialist, and hopefully it opens more doors and promotions can see, especially for this man on the other side of my screen, that he's a weapon when it comes to in-ring and behind the scenes production. He can do that as well, right? So it's a cool time for the both of us to give back.
Bobby, I wanted to ask you about your involvement in DDP yoga, how that, what the genesis of that was. And, we've seen so many success stories, not only in wrestling, but if you followed DDP's work, just average human beings with complete turnarounds. Can you talk about how you became involved, but also for wrestlers, and you touched on it a tiny bit earlier, just how important that core work and flexibility with the spine is to keep yourself not only active longer, but avoid injuries, et cetera.
Yeah, I feel like Dallas himself, being in the industry as long as he was and starting from what most would consider an advanced age, it's wear and tear. I mean, that's really what our industry forces upon the human body more than anything. It's not one instance of an injury. It's the accumulation of like night after night after night, and it's a pounding. And I think that he kind of stumbled upon just this magic recipe for, he calls it, holding off the hands of time. There is no, you know, Father Time is undefeated, and we're all, gonna eventually do the job to Father Time. But there's a way to, keep that at arm's distance for as long as you can. And I feel like DDP yoga has really become that for me. I experienced it firsthand. 2018, I had ACL surgery. And prior to that, I had the app because Dallas was gracious enough to gift it to not only professional wrestlers within WWE, but I'm talking industry-wide. Dallas just gifted his program to people. And so I had it for a good long time. Right around that time, I had met Dallas. And I just decided to get into it after my ACL surgery. And lo and behold, 2018, that's when it started. And I can't think of more than 2 days in a row where I would have not at least done it, you know, since 2018. If it's near daily, and if I miss a day, you know, it's only because I'm traveling or whatever the case. And so that's why eventually it just, the light bulb went off, like, man, I should maybe see about the certification, because that was an offered and that they were doing for people. And I was like, this is something that like I truly believe in, because I've experienced it myself. And it was, it took time and it took patience to start to see, like, it's not the same thing as when you go to the gym and you know, the weights go up or the reps go up or the what. Where you improve is in your mobility, the positions. You can stay in the positions longer, or you can get deeper. And that takes a different kind of patience, but it's still a metric. It's still trackable. And I think that that's the key. You know, there's something about the human spirit that just needs progress. And the progress can be incremental, but as long as there's progress. And I think that that's what the program, that's a key to the program. And I know that there's a lot that I do to my body that makes it not feel good on a weekly, daily basis, but it's one of the only things that makes my body feel better. If I come off of a long road loop or a few difficult workouts or whatever, like, my body actually craves it. And in the morning, it's the only way that I can express it. And I'll hit anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour, and I feel better. I feel way better. I feel like it's almost reversed the effects of whatever was ailing me. And I think if you go on, just do a Google search of DDP yoga, the stories that you'll see far outshine, you know, my own personal tale of how it's improved my life. it's really astonishing to see some of the transformations that he has been the epicenter for.
Yeah, for sure. Diamond Cutter is a heck of a workout to do too, for all those reasons, restorative wise, sure, that you talk about. Yeah, it's good stuff. Gentlemen, you've been very generous with your time tonight. Before I get into the area where I ask you about your respective projects that you have ongoing and combined projects, I wanted to ask you one last wrestling-related question, Bobby, and that's only speaking in terms of in-ring, not production, not coaching, etc. Do you have any outstanding goals or milestones that you want to reach that you haven't yet achieved? I know you're working with MLW now, and they're a revitalized company for various reasons too, but is there anything across the map, bucket list, that you haven't achieved that you want to?
I'm pretty satisfied with my in-ring career as I sit here today. There's always more to do. They'll never be an end to that road. I think that's just the competitor in us. It's the athlete in us. But at the same time, it's also, I think it's what separates some from coaching and not coaching. That I really got the give back bug at the moment. I'm fully at peace with not being in the spotlight. And now that's not to say that I won't take it and be there if it's asked, and that I don't still derive enjoyment from doing it. I will, but that'll be the case until, I'm 6 feet under. So it's really just a matter of balancing both, because right now I want consistency and I want longevity in my life and in my future career choices. And, we don't get to pro wrestle for the rest of our lives, nor do I want to. But my, God willing, my body's still allowing me to do it and to do it at a high level. Like I said, I'm more than likely going to be taking another Muay Thai fight by the end of the year. The wheels haven't fallen off this thing yet, and they're not showing any signs exactly of, that they're going to anytime soon. So, I'm going to ride this thing until the wheels do fall off. But we'll see. I will not let that interfere though with, my pursuit of longevity and consistency. And I think that's where giving back is, that's the realm in which, I think that kind of stokes the flame a little bit more for me than anything else.
Awesome. I know you have, you've entered the podcast game and have an excellent podcast that I subscribe to and check out all the time, but I'm going to start with Matt. Can you tell the people what they need to know about your projects, current, upcoming, etc.? And then I'll ask the same question of Mr. Fish.
Yeah, mine's a combo of both Halleck's Hitting Garage and Bobby. So I'll hit on a little bit of the Halleck's Hitting Garage. So it's a family business. Halleck's Hitting Garage is a physical space. I'm in my garage of the house that I own, but it's essentially me, and it stems from my father. My father was a coach. So it's within my bloodline to give back and develop youth talent at all ages. But we're at the forefront of philanthropy and volunteerism. We're coming into Philadelphia, myself, Taylor Nicholson, who is the daughter of Angie and Rick Nicholson, the head coach and assistant coach at Georgia State University softball. She is one of my apprentices. She's coming up through the coaching realm, still in college softball. Allie King played college softball. She has an NIL development contract with WWE. So I'm tied, mm-hmm, obviously, to that side. But we're coming into Philly. We're going to do mission work with the pediatric cancer ward of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which is America's oldest cancer research center for children. We're going to be working with the YMCA and some youth women development groups there. We're going to be in Texas, in Atlanta, potentially Los Angeles this year as well. And I coach talent here in the Tampa Bay area of Florida. And in combination with Bobby and all things, we're starting to get pulled into the realm of, you know, working with young talent and again, honored and gracious with Natalia Hart and TJ Wilson, and working with Cam Fox and Kai Price out of the Dungeon 2.0, and potentially some stuff that we're doing at the Dark Arts Gym with Malachi and Tom Budge and Thea. So I'm excited to work with my friend because he's a coach. He gets to do in-ring coaching and I get to do talent development on the outside of, you know, how do you professionally communicate and operate. And I'm with a mental training plan company that helps individuals pre, during, and post athletic events or sporting events to deal with mental training. I'm a mental training specialist too. So a lot of stuff with the garage, but it's a combo with my friend, my grade school, high school friend from the Capital Region of New York in Bobby Fish.
Bobby?
Yeah, I feel like we got so many things going on, but they do kind of converge, and the repetitive intersection tends to be, you know, the coaching and the giving back. And I didn't anticipate, you know, my wife, she used to do some teaching, and she would tell me all the time, like, there's something you get out of it. You don't necessarily anticipate it, but then it's there, and like you see the light bulb go off, and like she would tell me over and over and over, and whether I want to admit it or not, like she's right, and I've seen it with when I've been able to instruct, whether it be DDP yoga or Muay Thai or professional wrestling, and to present an analogy to a client or a student and for to see the light bulb go off in their head, for them to connect the dots and get it, knowing that someone did that for me, whenever it was, however many years ago, or at some point in my history, to experience that moment in the present is, yeah, man, it's much cooler than I ever anticipated. And once I had that, I think that's what I'm in pursuit of, because it just feels selfishly so damn good.
Well, gentlemen, we very much appreciate your time this evening. We're going to keep on top of all the goings on with your respective endeavors and mutual endeavors, and good luck this week in Philly. It sounds like it's going to be a typically crazy yet enjoyable experience.
Yes
sir, only in pro wrestling will all these intersections converge, and Philadelphia is going to be a happening spot.
Yes, thank
excellent.
You
Jack. Excellent. Well, fans, that's it for this edition of the Cheap Heat Productions Pro Wrestling Podcast with Matt and Bobby. Much appreciated. We'll stay on top, like I said, of their endeavors, and possibly do another one in the future if they're so willing. But until then, take care, everybody.
That's it.